I'd like you to picture yourself behind the wheel of a car. You are in this vast, long expanse of desert. You can only see a mountain range in the distance. And 5 miles away from you, there is a target. Let's say it's a bright 20-foot wide circle. And your task is to line up and hit that circle, driving at 125 miles an hour. You have no specific directions. The person just says, that-a-way. And the thing is, you are not going to see this target until you're almost upon it. You have no GPS. You have no road map. You have no signs or arrows telling you which way to go. Do you think you could hit it? Now, let's take this scenario and magnify it by 10 and add a vertical dimension to it. You may have heard the news that last week a gentleman named Luke Akins set a new skydiving record. For he jumped from a plane at 25,000 feet, that is almost 5 miles, toward a target that he would not see until he was probably 3/4 of the way down. Now, what made this jump so spectacular was not the altitude. It was the altitude plus the fact that he wasn't wearing a parachute. And his need was to hit dead center a 100-foot wide net that was being held up at the corners by 4 cranes. I want to give you the willies. Just watch this. Uh-oh, we're supposed to sing a hymn? Nope, there we go.
Gotcha, inside lights are on. Jumpers are climbing.
Doors open, here we go. They're off. Now he's practicing the flip. That's how he'll have to land. He'll have to land on his back. At 18,000 feet, the oxygen mask will come off. That will be from his cousin, Andy Farrington. Will be closest to him. There goes the oxygen mask. Now at 12,000 feet, he'll hear a beep in his helmet. That will tell him he's halfway home. Momentarily, we'll see his jump team pull their chutes, and that means Luke is all alone for the rest of the way. At 6,000 feet, he'll get another beep in his helmet. There goes the chutes. Luke is on his own. And the crowd on the ground looking up, they have a visual on him right now. He's in! moving. From here, it looked perfect. You've just witnessed history being made.
Is your breakfast churning a little bit? You know, dangerous stunts like this require a lot of skill and a lot of courage, and I think equal portions of insanity. Because people like Luke Aikens like pushing the boundaries. They get a charge out of living on the edge, and the euphoria they feel after taking such incredible risk makes it somehow all worthwhile. Now, another scenario. In 1974, a Frenchman named Philippe Petit performed another courageous, insane act. The World Trade Center, New York City, was nearing completion. And after spending months studying the patterns of the construction crews, he knew when and how to get past the construction gate. And so one night, he and his accomplices went to the top of the North and South Towers, and they spent the night rigging a steel-tight wire between the towers. And at 7 a.m., with a balance beam and no net beneath of him, Petit began his 140-foot walk, 110 stories above the streets of New York City with no net. It was an incredible feat, and when the police arrived, the ice water vein Petit had already gone back and forth 8 times in 45 minutes. And in appreciation of this remarkable feat, the police arrested him, but not while he was on the wire. Years ago, I was in a church board retreat at the Fatima Retreat Center on the Notre Dame campus. Our retreat leader for the weekend was Father Bill Simmons. He taught religion at Notre Dame, a deeply spiritual man and a wonderful storyteller. And he began the weekend by giving us this scenario. Let's imagine, he said, I have a very long 2x8 plank. And it is going to be mounted 6 inches off of the ground. Do you think you could walk the length of that board and not fall off? And many of us said, piece of cake. Sure, we could do that. He says, okay, now let's take that same plank and stretch it between the twin towers of the World Trade Center. Could you do it then? And no hands went up, and we just had this blank kind of stare because we know that none of us would do such a thing as that. But then Bill gave an incentive. He said, what if there was something precious on the other side? What if there was a prize? What if it would be worth so much that you would accept the danger of walking that plank? And then he said, for you, what would be on the other side? A mountain of money, restored relationships, having the ability to wipe away the tears of sorrow from all that you love, world peace, government that works, a mansion in the sky, an end to all human suffering, answers to life's most compelling questions, the guarantee of eternity with God, or even Jesus himself. What would it take to get you to walk to the other side? What on earth or in heaven could persuade you? And where would you find the trust to do it? We say that Such things are matters of faith. But faith is one of those dog-eared, threadbare words that we hear so often, and for all intents and purposes, we have forgotten what it is all about. Someone who came close was Archie Bunker. He said, "Faith is believing what nobody else is crazy enough to believe in." Or you could say having faith is like standing in that glass-enclosed cubicle that is outside the top floor on the Sears Tower. Have any of you ever stood in that thing? You ought to try it. Lori has, of course. Lori has. Lori will try anything. Yeah. And there's this incredible skywalk bridge that juts out over the Grand Canyon. Glass bottom, and you go out on that thing, and you can see the beauties and the dangers that go hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of feet below. Would you do that? Lord knows that we live in terrifying times, and prospects for something better on the horizon are nil. We walk on glass, I guess you could say, and below our feet we can't see what's holding us up. And if there is something holding us up, what if it fails? And what if we fall through and no one ever finds us? Just have faith, we're told. Not faith in our abilities, but in the power of God. But so often that's easier said than done, isn't it? Because faith is not something you can see, you cannot touch. There are times, as someone put it, when faith seems like following the unseen into the unknown. And that's hard. Because you see, we always want directions and details. But you see, faith isn't what's left after all of our doubts have been washed away. And faith is not what's left after we've filtered out all of those voices telling us that believing and trusting in God is a waste of a good life. Faith alone won't make the sorrows and struggles of life disappear. I want you to listen again to these words from Hebrews. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Indeed, by faith, our ancestors received approval. And by faith, we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God so that what is seen is made out of that which is invisible. And so I guess you could say that faith is the invisible means of God's support. Faith is founded on hope. Faith trusts what it cannot see. I want you to listen to what Frederick Buechner says about faith. He said, faith is better understood as a verb rather than a noun. It is a process and not a possession. It is on again and off again and not once and for all. Faith is not being sure where you're going, but going there anyway. It is a journey without maps. Doubt is not the opponent of faith, for doubt is an element of faith. Because you see, what faith enables us to do is to look beyond appearances. Faith enables us to look past the bluster of the politicians and keeps us looking further out and trusting that he who knows all things in heaven and on earth holds everything in his hands. Faith sees beyond the darkness of our time or to a time, and we don't know how long, when all will be well, and the last word will be God's, and everything will be as God intended it to be. Abraham, he's a fascinating character. You remember that God made a promise to Abraham, actually two. The promise of a promised land and promise of descendants. And he went, but he didn't know where he was to go. The text says he looked for a city with foundations. And who wouldn't after spending years and years living in tents? It says he saw a city whose builder and architect was God. But not only did they see that, but they had to have faith in that other component of God's promise that they would have descendants, and that was going to be a hard thing to do for a couple that was older than dirt. Sarah's uterus had withered long ago. Descendants were as likely as a cow jumping over the moon, but God kept the promise. Abraham and Sarah had a baby. And I love that hint of humor in the passage. Therefore, from one person and this one as good as dead, descendants were born, as many as the stars of heaven. Now, there is this caveat, because neither Abraham nor his descendants saw what was beyond them. They did not get to see the promises. Yet from a distance, it says they greeted them, not with binoculars, but with eyes of faith, because everything they believed and every way they acted was oriented toward that better country, a heavenly one. You know, I have the utmost admiration and respect for people I've known who model faith in God in times of trial. They learn to walk on glass. They can see what's below them. They see the dangers that are all around and against them. They know how vulnerable they are. And they expect their Christian faith to be tested. And in weak moments, it may seem to them that it's easier to believe in faith rather than trust that God is in control. And as you know, these are the kinds of people who do not want to be examples for anyone else. They do not want to be placed on pedestals. But by the manner of their living, they are inspirations to all who see them. This week, a friend of mine called and who knew that things have been difficult for our family over the last month and a half. And he says, "How you doing?" But beyond that, he says, "Where do you go for support?" And I thought a moment. And I said, "I go see a dead man who's dying of ALS. And that surprised me at first, but it shouldn't really, because people like Robin, who have reconciled themselves with death, are inspirations to us if we would listen to them. Here's Robin, day by day, for the last 3 years, dealing with one loss after another. The loss of health. The loss of his beloved wife and home. The loss of his grandson. The functioning of his arms and legs and back muscles and bodily functions. Perhaps he will lose his speech. And at last he will lose his breath. All the while, his mind is perfectly clear. A dying man keeps me focused and supports me," I said. "Because you see, after nearly everything has been stripped from Robin, what I see left is faith. The absolute dependence that at the end, God is all that we have left And God is all we ever had in the first place until we came into the world and started surrounding ourselves with all of the things that we think are most important. You know, as my daughter and her family grieve Jay's tragic death, the question of why has not gone away. Neither for Lisa nor for me. I said, I don't get it, God. This does not make any sense whatsoever. Is there some lesson to be learned? Does someone have to die in order to teach us a lesson? And just days after the happiest day of her life, she's left with five children to care for by herself? Really? You know, I've been there. And I said, what is Lisa supposed to make of you now? Would it be so much, God, to just give her this little handle of hope that she could hold on to? And then people are looking to me as though I have insider information and that I know the answer of why. And that I completely understand how God is at work in this tragedy. But when I ask those troubling questions, then I remember Abraham and his descendants who lived towards something they would never see, at least in this life. I think of Jesus who asked the same questions. I think of all who have asked, okay, God, is this how you treat your friends? Or on the other extreme, my God, why have you forsaken me? I want you to listen carefully to these words by Barbara Brown Taylor. To have faith in God, to have faith that we are in good hands, to have faith that whether or not we understand it, the universe makes sense. And that is the hardest choice that any of us will ever make. To decide it is true is to step out into the air without a net. Because we have no proof, no evidence, nothing but the witness of our own hearts that it is so. We simply give up the illusion that we are in control of our lives, and we go to the edge and we just step out. Which is why, perhaps, it is called the leap of faith. I doubt that any of us will be jumping out of an airplane at 25,000 feet with no parachute and falling 5 miles back to earth into a net, even if it is something that they said, oh, just trust me, you can do it. No, none of us are ever going to do that, but net or no net, we trust that because God has made everything that is, and that the God we have come to know in Jesus is trustworthy, is in fact so, we can have faith in the assurance of things hoped for, and in the conviction of things not seen. And even if we fall through, we still have the faith that there are strong and sure hands that will catch us. Amen.